This is it, what? Satoshi's pouring from the sky. Stack some chips up. No fear of missing out. I'd rather dip and flip. What? Now pump it up and double up is what we hit. What? 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 This is it, what? Satoshi's pouring from the sky. Stack some chips up. No fear of missing out. I'd rather dip and flip. What? Now pump it up and double up is what we hit. What?
Welcome, Samurai Wallet and Bitcoin Q&A to 21ism interview. This is our second time round, second time on the Creative Carousel, and Samurai Wallet is our dev this month, our featured dev, our favorite dev, building some of the most amazing tech in the space. I absolutely love what he's built, and I don't understand all of it, so I've got Bitcoin Q&A along with me to ask some of the more technical questions. He's been helping me behind the scenes to understand and use this incredible technology. So welcome, both of you.
Evening, Max. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
Absolute pleasure. And we've spoken a few weeks ago, actually, on Bit by Bit. And it was one of the best interviews I've done. I've had so many people reach out saying how much they loved it and how it spurred them on to actually use some of the tech. And it's really nice to hear that. So I'm really excited to have you back on and dig a little bit deeper into this stuff. And like I said to you, it's a bit more rapid fire this time. So I've put some questions to you and we're going to put you on the spot now.
Okay.
All right. So what was it about Bitcoin that first grabbed your attention?
Well, I had a requirement to use it. I needed to move money from one country to the other, and it was the cheapest option. That's what got me first interested, in learning more about it. And this was back in, late 2012. And, once I started researching, read the white paper and researching more about this, the more incredulous I became that it was even possible. So it went further than the utility aspect of what I did use it for to the, wow, if this is truly possible, the implications of this, could be very, very drastic and possibly even beneficial. But that remains, remains to be seen. And I wanted to, if that was the case, and the more I dug into it, the more I convinced myself that this was indeed the case, then I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And, that's kind of the short answer to that question.
Okay. So you needed to move some money. You thought, right, this is the best tool, the best way to do it, the most cost-effective way to do it. And then how long did it take you before you got to the point where you're like, okay, right, this is fucking amazing. Like, I want to spend my whole time on this tech and building on it. And like, how long was it from, right, this is a useful tool that I can use to my advantage to, right, this is something I care deeply
very
about.
Rapid.
Was it?
Very, very rapidly. yeah, it was a mind virus. I think that's the best way that I can describe it. And it was something that I wanted to understand, keep understanding, almost immediately after I interacted and used it. I walked into a local supermarket, a local medium-sized chain, the equivalent of a Tesco's. And I dropped cash on the counter, and they gave me back a voucher type thing. I went back home, inputted that voucher information into some website, which then did some sort of money order thing with like a Western Union or something. That's just how early it was. And then on the other end, the person received it, and it was magical to me because the cost was, virtually, you know, it was nothing back then. An international transfer like that was at least $100. So this was negligible. And as soon as I had the utility down, I said, I understood what people would use it for. And that's what people were using it for at the time. A lot of remittance stuff was going on. As soon as I saw that, I needed to understand the technology behind it and understand what made it tick and what made it what would prevent it from becoming just another tool to oppress us? And it was very exciting. I kind of dropped everything else just to focus solely on it and learn about it. And I used my skill set, which was already in technology, to do what I could to advance what I wanted to see it become.
Obviously, after that, it's then taking you to a point where you've thought, right, it's very, you're talking about, we don't want this to be a tool that can oppress us.
Yeah.
So then that has led you down the route of saying, okay, well, I want to be able to use this technology. I want to actually be able to use this privately. And that is why you've gone down this privacy route and you've built what you've built. And the reason we're speaking now and we're so excited to have you on 21ism, and this is definitely a would be seen as a biased view, but I think it is by far the best thing out there for privacy. I absolutely fucking love it. So does Bitcoin Q&A.
Thank you very much.
So how did it get to that point? Like, you're using it, you think this is amazing for remittance, this is an amazing technology, it's grabbed you, it's this mind virus. When did you then go, okay, now I need to build something so that this can be private?
So I had done various stints within the industry, early industry participants, most of which aren't even around anymore, offering my skill set to them to help build out their infrastructure and their tools and their apps and products and services. And I was kind of getting disillusioned with what I was seeing. I felt like people were going in a direction that I found to be ill-advised far too early. I think there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of hopium in the air. It was kind of around the first run up to, I think, $1,000 or something. And I was just kind of just telling myself that, you know, maybe if I don't like the way these people are doing it, instead of using my time to build their products and services, maybe I should do it myself and do something different. And I was very, very fortunate to be in contact with and in communication with TDevD, who is also mm-hmm. known as Samurai Dev, who does a vast majority of the development work on the wallet side. And we both are very like-minded in that respect. We both saw the same type of thing. We've both been around maybe a little longer than some of the other younger guys in the space. We've seen the dot-com bubble and bust. We've seen lots of things. So, and we saw the development of the internet and how, for the most part, it's been entirely captured by regulatory interest and by busybodies who want to know what you're up to. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to see the same type of thing happening in Bitcoin. We didn't want to see, and we were starting to see the inklings of that type of mentality entering the space, and it was just far too early for it. You know, we expected that to happen at some point, but you know, not when it was that immature. So that was really why we decided to start Samurai Wallet and that vision of transactional privacy, the freedom to transact without fear of reprisal from anyone. You know, it has nothing to do with legality. It can be, like I think I've told, like I've said in the past, it can be an abusive husband. It can be a theocratic regime. It can be all sorts of things that you don't want people to see your bank account transactions, your bank account records, right? Like, no one has access to that by default. So why would you want anyone to see your Bitcoin transactions? It just doesn't make any sense. It's an obvious thing to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you've come up with some really clever ways to achieve this. I'm very glad that you've done it. And, you know, all these privacy features that you and TDev and whoever else is on your team are doing are fantastic. My limited knowledge on how all of this stuff works, although I'm trying my best and learning as I go, it really is limited. So I think it'd be a good time now to explore some of these things that you've built and the way you're thinking about things. So Bitcoin Q&A, if you can jump in, please. I know you've got some questions ready.
Yeah, hey Samurai. Want to say it's a pleasure to be chatting with you this evening. My first question for you follows on quite nicely from you were mentioning that it was yourself and TDevD that got this thing off the ground. I presume the team has grown slightly since then. I'm just curious how many people are sort of actively working on the wallet and, you know, and all of the surrounding software, and how in working in what I presume is a dispersed team, how do you sort of prioritize what you guys need to focus on next?
Yeah, good question. So first of all, before I answer, I think this is the first time we've ever actually chatted on voice.
It is indeed. Yeah.
So it's, I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done, and all the documentation, all the help you provided people in the Telegram rooms, all the article is just phenomenal. And I just want to say thank you for that. It helps us out tremendously.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So to answer your question, we are, yes, we definitely have grown since it was just me and T-Dev. It was me and T-Dev from, I believe since we started in 2015 to around 2017. And then that's when we started to grow the team a little bit. And, we are at a total of 9 people now. We have myself who is the one who does these types of things, manages the Telegram rooms and the business side of stuff, the UI and the UX, the Twitter. Oh no, that's the intern. Sorry. basically none of the mission critical development work. That's all T-Dev and his team. So on the development side of things, we got T-Dev D, who's the architect of it all, client side. And we have, actually it's 10. We have Kenshin, who is our Dojo developer. We have Laurent, who is in charge of the OXT project. And he does a lot of transaction analysis and privacy write-ups on how we can improve our own systems and how we can, and new ideas and new features that we can do. We have Ergo BTC, who is in charge of the OXT research team, and they focus on analyzing public blockchain events and writing reports in a way that is easy for, you know, the average reader to try to comprehend and learn from and improve their own practices and privacy based on the findings of that research. On the we have Sharath in, who is our Android developer, a phenomenal guy. He first started by just contributing to the GitHub. You know, that's, that was back then when we used GitHub. He just contributed an improvement to the UI and the UX, and it was phenomenal. And he started working with us. We have, Zero Leak, who is the Whirlpool, main guy on Whirlpool, architect of that and continues to build that out. Gosh, I hope I don't forget anyone. And we have the support guys who, there's 2 of them. We have 2 support guys, and they're able to manage around a 16-hour day coverage where you can email support or live chat with support and get a response back within a few minutes to our around 125,000 installs, which is, I think, frankly, unheard of in this industry. I take a lot of pride. So we have our 2 guys on there. Yeah. And we have a QA department, which actually it's support and QA. So those 2 guys, while they're doing that support function, they're also working on the QA side of things, doing testing, making sure the next build of the wallet that's in the pipeline is stable as possible and doesn't contain any bugs, regression testing, all that sort of stuff. So we're doing quite a lot. We do have a big footprint for such a small team, but it's the result of staying focused. And the second part of your question was, how do you prioritize what to focus on? And well, you know, it's not easy. We started designing Whirlpool in 2015, so it's about long term goals and long term focus and being very iterative to reach those goals, being realistic about what you can achieve with the size of your team. You know, I listed off a list of names of people there because I really do want to give them the credit that they deserve. What those guys have been able to achieve on a shoestring budget it awes me. You know, it absolutely awes me. So staying focused and having a long-term vision and long-term goal and building blocks, it's all about the building blocks. Thank you.
I just want to sort of echo what Max said earlier and what you just touched on there is that, you know, what you guys have achieved on such a, like you say, a small budget in such a small team is quite frankly astonishing. So, really, really great. And you mentioned about QA and what's sort of in the pipeline. Obviously, something that's raising in notoriety at the moment is Soroban.
Yep.
So, our first question would be, when Soroban launch? And the second part of that question would be, sort of, do you see Soroban providing any sort of additional use cases over and above what version one will provide?
Okay, yeah, good question. So yeah, Soroban, if the listeners don't know, is a encrypted Tor-based communication layer that's going to allow peer-to-peer communication between two users of a Samurai wallet. And what this will allow is us to improve the user experience for certain types of functionality in the wallet that relies on back and forth communication between two wallets. So where you do things manually right now by scanning QR codes, Soroban automates the process and turns a, you know, 30 to 45 second manual procedure into a 5 to 10 second automatic procedure. So that is, that hasn't hit QA yet. That's still in the phase of development that we call internal testing. So that means as a team, we're all using that build. We're all playing and testing on that build and using the everyday functionality of that wallet in addition to testing specifically Soroban related, functionality. And in addition to that, since it's quite a big feature that requires, a lot of testing in terms of how it reacts on different networks and different devices and different versions of Android, et cetera. We've actually recruited an internal testing group of some of our users. I think it's a group of around 55 users who are also testing as well and providing feedback and reports. So we're still in that phase right now, and we should be leaving that phase, I think, realistically, sometime next week. I want to say it's quite close. It's fairly close. I'm the one holding it up with additional UX changes and additional tweaks here and there. Once it hits the QA process, it's kind of hard to say how long that can take. We're trying to get that more streamlined and quicker, but at the end of the day, it's only three people. So, you know, who are dedicated to that. Could take about 3 weeks to get through it, maybe. Maybe it can get rushed through quicker, and it really kind of depends on how the regression testing goes and all that sort of stuff. We run, you know, hundreds of different tests through the QA process of every possible thing you can do in the wallet. So it on multiple devices and multiple versions, so it can take some time.
Cool. And do you see Soroban providing any other use cases in the future?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There's an endless amount of use cases for Soroban that Bitcoin is only even maybe 10% of it, what Soroban can be used for. In our case, I can say publicly that the next thing that we'll be focusing on Soroban. Oh, excuse me. Sorry about that. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. the next thing we'll be focusing is multi-party TX0s for Whirlpool. So Soroban will allow us to compose TX0s for entering Whirlpool, where instead of being one person, there's multiple people involved in a single single TX0, and that will break the current heuristic that, you know, the person entering a TX0 is, there's only one of those people, and they are in control of all of the inputs of that transaction.
Okay, so that completely skews with even more heuristics again. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Fuck. Okay.
That's a good one. That one is a good one.
Wow. Mind blowing. I must say, as one of the lucky 50 people that you mentioned earlier that's getting to play with this sort of stuff. For anybody listening, it's an absolute game changer for those Kahoot spends, and keep your eye out for when that gets launched, because it's an absolute game changer, and with the possibility of multi-party TX0s as well, I think it's going to be a bit of a juggernaut.
Sorry, can you just explain that so that I can understand exactly what that is going to do. Is that just going to improve privacy again? How is that working?
So right now, the TX0, that's kind of the setup, right? This is
the initial.
Yeah, the initial transaction where you're saying, I want these inputs that I want to put into Whirlpool. And, you know, it gets divided up into like size amounts and you pay the fee, and a op return output is also in there. Now, right now, every single TX0 out there, you know, with 100% certainty, because, you know, if you looked at our code and our architecture, that the person making that transaction, that TX0 transaction, also is the person that owns the inputs associated with that transaction, right? So the coins that you have selected to enter Whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
With this change, with a multi-party TX0, you may have 10, 20, 30, 40 inputs that are owned by multiple parties, different parties who don't necessarily know each other at all. They're just multiple people. It's more of a batch style transaction. They all pay the fee in one transaction. All the outputs are created in the same transaction. So you no longer have any certainty as to how many participants are actually in a TX0 transaction, and which, so they don't know which entity owns which inputs to those, or if they're the same entity. Yeah.
Okay. I was listening. I was just slightly tuning out, because in my ear at the same time, my headphones were telling me that they're about to die because I stupidly didn't fucking charge them, which is really unprofessional. So I was listening, and now I understand, and that sounds awesome.
Sorry, my Nokia burner phone here went off in the middle of the interview, so that's pretty unprofessional too.
That's cool. We like to keep it unprofessional here anyway, so that's all good.
There we go.
Just touching again, you know, you mentioned that the team's fairly small. If there's somebody listening to this that thinks that they can contribute, you know, no matter how small, how would you, obviously aside from donations, which I'm sure would be greatly received, how would somebody go about wanting to contribute to the project?
The best way is getting involved in the community. If it's not code related, if you don't have the code skill set, the best way is getting involved in the community, whether on Twitter, Telegram, or creating your own community, maybe in a place that, you know, we don't have a presence on, and helping out, helping people out, or even just asking questions. So you yourself, you know, learn, and by asking questions publicly, help other people learn who are maybe too shy, to ask themselves, but they watch and they read and they observe. So that's a huge part of it. The next step I would say is kind of what you've been doing, Q&A, which is creating all this documentation. I mean, really an enormous amount. I feel like I should be paying you for this, honestly. It's unbelievable. And it's so helpful, because unfortunately, and you know, it's a criticism that I fully take on, is that documentation within Samurai is light. And it is, you know, we just haven't had the time to write up proper and comprehensive and good documentation. An effort has been started. We recognize the, you know, the lack of that, and we're making efforts to rectify it. But the fact that you've taken on a lot of that burden, and we're able to reference your work when dealing with our own community and answering questions, has been hugely beneficial and helpful to us. I think even more so than even Bitcoin donations, which we do happily receive. We get a couple every month, which is nice usually. And if you're able to code, then get in touch with us, talk to us. You know, we have no issue taking on new contributors, you know, and the big difference between Samurai and a lot of the open source projects out there is that we have very, very clear goals, TDev and I, and we have very clear roadmap that we want to execute on. So it's less like a traditional open source project where you decide, hey, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to submit it. And, you know, the consensus of the community will decide whether it goes in there or not. That's not quite how it works with Samurai. The consensus of the community doesn't necessarily matter to us. What matters to us is executing on our objectives and how that fits in. And we, you know, it's not that we don't value those types of submissions. And it's not that we don't like those types of submissions. It's just that, going back to the first question, a very, very laser focus is required in order to achieve the results that we've been able to achieve. You know, so provided that, you know, and if developers aren't cool with that, and it's totally understandable and totally fine, they may not want to contribute to a project where they're not able to sufficiently, you know, make the impact they think they should be able to make. Totally get that. Not a problem on our end either. But if that doesn't sound like a problem to you, reach out to us, talk to us, submit a PR. We'll take a look at it and communicate openly with you about it. And we and last, I mean, quite honestly, just use the stuff. You know, that's the best feedback that we can get is people engaging in the features and using the tool and providing feedback on the tool to us, because that's the feedback mechanism that doesn't lie is Whirlpool numbers, is the numbers of post-mix stonewalls that are going out. That type of thing doesn't lie. And that tells us that people are using it, people are finding value in the features that we're building, and that we're on the right track on a product level. So that's also a very important part of it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there in terms of just getting involved with the community. I've learned so much from all the other guys in the Telegram and on Twitter and stuff like that. So yeah, I think that's a takeaway for anybody else wanting to sort of really grok and understand this stuff, is get amongst it in the Telegram group and start asking questions.
Whatever skill set you have, you know, it can be contributed in some way. But asking questions is a huge one. It really is a good one, because people learn. People really do learn, the ones that are reading. One thing, I mean, that I love is seeing the YouTube videos that people make, because we don't have a very big presence on YouTube. That's just one of those things, again, where we just don't have the time to dedicate too much to creating YouTube content, because it's kind of a time investment, especially if you're not trained editors and whatnot. So if people who do have that skill set are listening and would like to get involved, then make videos and get the word out that way. Getting the word out is really what we have to work with in terms of a marketing budget. You know, we don't do sponsorships really. Like we sponsored a Transaction Observer website, Mempool Observer. Mempool.observer is a great website for tracking the state of the mempool. We sponsored that, but besides that, we don't do any kind of sponsorship really at all. The best that we can hope for is word of mouth, and we don't have the budgets of Coinbases and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so word of mouth is essential to us, and that's blogging and that's podcasting, Max. That's all of the stuff. It really does help us out a lot.
Yeah, well, the way I look at all of this stuff is, if you build a product that is very, very good and people want to use it, they're going to talk about it, and I think that's exactly what's happening. You know, I'm glad you've said, and so many other people have said, that the work Bitcoin Q&A is doing is so important, because I've been astounded.
Yeah.
The amount of effort that has gone into this, the amount of work that he's doing all the time is incredible, and he's helped me behind the scenes so much. And having people like him involved and so excited about this project, it speaks to just how great it is. You also talked about, you know, how can people help? How can people donate? We're going to have a donation page on 21ism. So anyone who wants to donate and help this project move forward, they will be able to do that on our website, and all of that will go directly to you guys.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I you know, like I said, my fucking
Thank
headphones
you for that.
Are beeping in my ear, and they're about to. no, of course. Listen, genuinely, I think this is the most important thing in Bitcoin, is that we get the privacy where it needs to be. And I think you guys are doing the best job of it by far. So
Thank
I can't
you.
Think of a better project to be supporting. So yeah, like I say, stupidly, my headphones are beeping, and I know that soon I will get cut out. So what I wanted to do, if it's okay with you, is just finish up with a couple of rapid fire questions, and yeah, I'll close the interview out after that. And I am gutted, and maybe we'll have to do another one in the future, because there's so much more I wanted to ask you. But yeah,
sure.
if you're ready, a couple more rapid fire.
Okay.
All right. So if you could speak to Satoshi, what would you say to him? If I gave you 1 hour in a pub with a pint, share a packet of crisps, what would that conversation go like?
Oh, man, that's a really difficult one. I'm going to cop out and say I wouldn't want to know at all who Satoshi was. At all.
Fair enough.
Even in this hypothetical, I would be very reluctant to know the identity of Satoshi.
Fair enough. Okay. And outside of obviously what you're working on and Ronan, what's your favorite dev or project in the space?
Outside of what we're working on and Ronan. Well, there's so many projects entering the space right now. I can't give you one specific one. I'm excited about all of the emphasis on on-chain coming back at the end of this year. I've noticed that emphasis on focusing on-chain is returning. So I applaud all of those builders. I think that's a very good way to strengthen what we're doing here. And anyone who is committed to non-custodial as well, and building non-custodial solutions to the tools. So anyone who's doing that, I think, is doing a service to everyone else.
Okay, great. And favorite hardware wallet, if you use one at all?
I don't use a hardware wallet.
I thought you might say that.
I like the look of the foundation device, just as a form factor. And from a UX level, and I think it's very, very nice.
This is the passport thing they're calling it, isn't it?
I don't know exactly what it's called. I know it's the one that they pissed off the cold card guys by by forking the code, which they were completely able to do as an open source project. And they will remain an open source project, apparently, while Cold Card is saying they're not going to be open source anymore. So I support open source as well, and their device just looks nice. I haven't ordered one. I might order one just because I like having these types of hardware for historical purposes, but I don't use hardware wallets.
Okay. All right. And final question to wrap things up. But before we do, I just wanted to say for a final time, thank you so much for what you're building. Thank you for moving this privacy game forward and making it accessible to fuckwits like me. thank you, Bitcoin Q&A, for helping me be able to use this amazing stuff that's being built by Samurai and his team.
Yeah.
And yeah, just both of you, keep doing what you're doing. You are so helpful. You are absolute diamonds in the space. So final question.
Okay.
Give me your best 1 minute privacy elevator pitch.
Well, we have privacy in many aspects of our personal lives by default. We put our letters into envelopes. We draw our curtains in the evening so people can't see inside our homes. We put up fences and hedges to protect our private spaces. Privacy is a natural human desire, and some people say it's a human right. I don't necessarily believe that it's a human right, because I dispute the concept of rights in general. But I do say it is a human fight. It's a natural fight and a struggle, and it's something innate in us as human beings to desire privacy. And what can be more intimate than the transactions that you make? Everything in life is a transaction, but the economic transactions that you make reveal a lot about you. And it would be advisable to keep that information as private as possible.
Good pitch. There we are.
Nailed
everyone,
it. Nailed
go
it.
And use Samurai Wallet. think about your privacy, care about your privacy, stop fucking around and giving all your information. Bitcoin is about more than just number go up. And Bitcoin Q&A, anything you want to dive in with?
No, I just want to say it's been a pleasure chatting with you guys. And obviously, it doesn't take a genius to work out that I'm very, very passionate about the Samurai Wallet collection of tools. So just want to say keep doing what you're doing, Samurai.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all you do again.
Awesome. All right. There's been a lot of love in this interview. Thank you, guys. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.